Hello everyone, welcome to the latest episode of the Space Monkey X Audio Workshop Presents Generation Tune. This is your host, Rob Lamley. Here on Generation Tune, we have three generations of cartoon fans. My wife, Andrea, a millennial, our daughter, Harper, a Gen Z kid, and myself, a Gen Xer, and we talk about the animated shows that have shaped who we are today. Last time we watched Andrea's pick, MTV's Daria, and this time we're back to Harper for a Gen Z touchstone series, Gravity Falls. Gravity Falls is the creation of Alex Hirsch, a graduate of the now-famous California Institute of the Arts, who got his start on The Marvelous Misadventures of Flapjack for the Cartoon Network that ran from 2007 until 2010. Then in 2010, Hirsch would help develop the show Fish Hooks for the Disney Channel. 2 years later, Hirsch would get a call from Disney to pitch a series of his own, and he gave them Gravity Falls. The show would air for 2 seasons of 20 episodes each, debuting on June 15, 2012, and completing its run on August 1, 2014. Gravity Falls tells the story of twin siblings Dipper and Mabel Pines, who are sent to stay with their great-uncle Stan, aka Grunkle Stan, for the summer to help him run the Mystery Shack, a tourist trap roadside attraction featuring bogus cryptozoological exhibits in the fictitious town of Gravity Falls, Oregon. The Pine twins were played by Jason Ritter and Christian Shaw. Jason is the son of beloved comedian John Ritter and actor Nancy Morgan. Ritter's career has mostly been live-action performances on shows like Parenthood, but he has done some voice acting outside of Gravity Falls, most notably as Ryder in Disney's Frozen 2. Shaw is a stand-up and improv comedian who gave a breakthrough performance as Mel, a stalkerish fan on HBO's Flight of the Conchords. She then became an occasional correspondent on The Daily Show, before appearing on popular comedies like 30 Rock. Much of her acting career has been as voices for shows like Bob's Burgers, The Simpsons, Adventure Time, and BoJack Horseman. She also plays a Triceratops toy named Trixie in the Toy Story films. The twins' mysteriously missing other grunkle, Stanford, is played by none other than J.K. Simmons, and one of their friends at the Mystery Shack, Wendy, is played by Freaks and Geeks alumni Linda Cardellini. Alex Hirsch plays many of the other characters, including Seuss, Grunkle Stan, and one-eyed pyramid baddie, Bill Cipher. In an unusual move, the show was not canceled in 2014, but was actually ended by Hirsch. Hirsch felt he had told the stories he wanted to tell at that time, so he closed out the show on a high note on his own terms, resulting in the multi-episode conclusion known as Weirdmageddon. Gravity Falls has quite a cult following, as well as high praise from critics. Even now, nearly 8 years after it went off the air, the show still has a 100% critics rating on Rotten Tomatoes and a 97% rating from the audience. It was also nominated for and won numerous awards throughout its run for both the show and its actors, including 3 Annie Awards, a BAFTA, and even an Emmy. The show expanded into print, most notably the book Gravity Falls Journal 3, which featured insights into the characters and creatures of Gravity Falls. The book stayed on the New York Times bestseller list for 47 weeks, and is still ranked in the top 100 kids' books on Amazon to this day. For this discussion on Generation Tune, we mainly focused on the 4-part series finale Weirdmageddon, because despite seeing most of the regular series episodes, Andrea had never watched how the show ended. In Weirdmageddon, Bill Cipher breaks free of his interdimensional bonds and brings his own brand of apocalypse to Gravity Falls. It's up to the Pine family and their friends to stop him from taking over the world. However, we also watched Season 2, Episode 10, Northwest Mansion Mystery. As the wealthy Northwest family prepares for their annual ball, their plans are interrupted by a ghostly lumberjack hell-bent on revenge for a slight from the Northwest's ancestors. Dipper is called in to try to exorcise the ghost, only to find he might have more sympathy for the dead than the living. Season 2, Episode 12, A Tale of Two Stans. In a flashback episode, we see how Stanley and Stanford Pines grew up to be the best of friends, only to have that relationship shattered when Stanley accidentally ruins his brother's chances of going to a prestigious university. And with that, let's get to our conversation about Gravity Falls. Okay, welcome back to Generation Tune. This is Rob.
Andrea.
Harper.
And this time we are going to talk about Harper's choice, which could have just as easily been my choice, to be honest with you. Gravity Falls.
Yes.
Just a few, as always, a few quick little things. Gravity Falls is the creation of Alex Hirsch, a graduate of the now famous California Institute of the Arts. He got his start working for the Cartoon Network on a show called The Marvelous Misadventures of Flapjack. And then shortly after that, basically he got a chance to pitch for Disney and he pitched Gravity Falls. Gravity Falls was a show that ran for 2 seasons of 20 episodes each, debuted on June 15th, 2012, and completing its run on August 1st, 2014. The inspiration for Gravity Falls came from Hirsch's own experiences as a kid when he and his twin sister Ariel would stay in a cabin with the family during summer vacations. The paranormal kind of aspects came from his fascination with the X-Files as well as tabloids like the Weekly World News. Mm-hmm. So it kind of combined his two loves as a kid. Okay, that's basically it. So yeah. What do you guys want to talk about?
Why did you pick it?
I picked it because, first of all, Gravity Falls is a show that I have grown up with for many, many years, and I still love it to this day. It's also a show that kind of really inspired me in my own art and, like, what I like writing and what I like creating. So I guess, like, it's really near and dear to my heart.
Sure.
Especially mm-hmm. with the entire, like, overarching story of it and, and the art style as well. That's another thing that I really like about it.
It's very sweet. Like, there's something very sweet about the art style.
The art style is very, like, it's both simple yet also complicated mm-hmm. at different times. Like, there are points where, like the characters will pop off the backgrounds really nicely because the backgrounds are like this heavily detailed, like, forest scene, and then there's this flat, like, round-faced character with round eyes and, like, with little noodle arms just walking across it like nothing is off. So it really grabs your attention to the character and what they're doing.
Right.
And the art style also gives the animators a lot of, like, able to, like, play with the limbs and be able to have the character do a bunch of movements because they're so, like, basically noodle arms and legs.
Mm-hmm. It's very reminiscent of Adventure Time in that aspect.
Yes.
And that's actually kind of become its own style. It's called now the Cal Art style, with the really big eyes and the kind of cutesy-looking face, but then also the rubbery limbs. It's kind of become, like, a thing.
A lot of cartoons, especially more recently, have a little bit or even completely with that style. Some people like it. Some people feel like it's getting old. Some people...
There is a lot of pushback against
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And I really feel like maybe, like, adapting that style, like, taking parts of that style that you like and putting it into your own art style is a good way to practice with animating and, like, a good way of, like, drawing in general and mm-hmm. getting used to drawing cartoons and stuff. But yeah, I personally am just fine with it. Like, I don't have that many strong opinions with the CalArts style.
That's fair. We watched a handful of episodes, but we kind of focused on the last three or four. Weirdmageddon, which is the mm-hmm. end of the series. The reason we kind of jumped around a little bit and just kind of focused on that was because Harper and I have watched the entire thing through, but Andrea has not watched the entire series. She's watched episodes,
like,
here and there.
All of season one, and then just it got spotty in season two.
Yeah, and so we'd kind of already visited most of the show as far as the Monster of the Week episodes, but Andrea had not seen the end of the series, so that was mm-hmm. kind of why we focused on the Weirdmageddon.
The end of the series is very unique because most, like, finale series tries to, like, basically just wrap everything up in a perfect little bow. Maybe there's like an ending boss battle of some kind or anything, and although Gravity Falls did have that, it was mostly just, like, it was mostly the characters that we all met throughout the series coming together to save their town.
Right.
And I feel like that is very different, especially because it was also creepy,
yeah.
which is my favorite part about Gravity Falls, is the fact that it's able to get weird and terrifying.
It is definitely a surprising feature of the show, because as we kept watching crazy things happening on screen, all of us would go,
"You're watching Disney,
right?" Or, you know, for kids,
there's animals bleeding from the mouth. My mouth, and we're just like, "Welcome to Disney Channel."
But personally, as a parent, as an adult, that's my favorite aspect, is that it does take the chance of being a little creepy and a little scary. As a kid, I would have just, oh my god, this would have been right up my alley.
Exactly.
As a kid. I mean, this is what I would have loved. So, I mean, that is one aspect of the show that I think is really interesting, is just the way it creeps everything out.
Gravity Falls described as basically just going, you know, for kids.
Right.
Like, just having that reminder of this was on Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this was pitched to teens. This is pitched to kids. Sure, older kids, but kids.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just, but it's not just the like horror and creepy aspect of it. I mean, there's also, I couldn't believe I was watching the gnome vomit a rainbow the first time I ever saw it.
Yeah.
And I don't even know, wasn't it out before, and we watched it before we had her watch
it? No, no, it was 2012 was when it debuted.
Yeah, it was.
So, okay, like,
so she was four.
Yes, but I watched it first.
That's what I mean, though. So, and then you brought me in to watch it.
And then we thought she was old enough she could handle it.
Because I want to say we watched the first episode together for the first time.
No, we're not
because
surprised.
I don't remember if it was you or me, but it was one of those moments where we had to keep rewinding it and, like, absolutely dying.
Yes, yeah.
Gravity Falls' humor is just amazing. Because, like, there are points where it's sometimes physical humor, like, where it's, like, a character doing a weird movement. And then there's also, like, with, like, verbal humor, where they're saying something that's just completely weird, and we love to laugh at it.
The humor is actually just as important as the scariness factor. And they balance each other so wonderfully.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, it's able to, in a terrifying moment, add a joke in there that doesn't completely ruin the scary moment, but it does draw the viewers back to the character. They're just like, yeah, this character would say this in this situation.
It's just enough to diffuse the situation a little bit.
Yeah.
So that it's not absolute terror.
Right.
And then it kind of, oh, it's funny still. And then I can laugh about it and then keep, you know, watching the eyes bleed from the stuffed animals. So,
yeah, that was fun.
I read a little bit, you know, doing some research on this, and basically Alex Hirsch just wrote whatever he wanted, and he never got notes from Disney on, like, you need to tame this down or anything like that. He basically just kind of got to do whatever he wanted for that.
Nice.
Which I think is kind of surprising. I mean,
well, Disney has definitely, like, not done that as much with more recent cartoons. Recent cartoons have definitely had more people, like, have, like, notes come back and just go, maybe we should tone this down, or maybe we should hype this up.
Yeah.
Like, different notes from that. But I really do like how they basically just told Alex Hirsch, hey, here.
Do your thing. But I think, again, because he balanced things so well with humor as well as the scary stuff, that's probably why they let it go.
Yeah.
Is because they saw that, you know, it wasn't scary all the time.
Right.
You know, it wasn't just this dark and brooding thing.
Gravity Falls, in the terrifying moments, would, like, be able to tell a joke that reminds you back to, oh, this is a kid's show. This is funny.
Right.
This is basically a comedy cartoon.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like, like you said, it really balances itself out really well. And it definitely, like, makes you laugh at some of the scary moments, but also still have that, like, bits of terror during those moments.
Yeah,
you're just like, I'm still scared, but that was funny.
right. One of the episodes we watched is one of my personal favorites. Was the Northwest Mystery Mansion?
Northwest Mansion.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Have it memorized.
Where the rich town folk throw a party. And that one is utterly terrifying. There's a lumberjack ghost with an axe in his head that's floating around, and he's turning people into wooden statues. And then you've got, like I was just saying, you've got the stuffed and mounted animals all bleeding from the eyes and talking, and then they're dragging themselves along later trying to capture. I mean, it is just describing it is just terrifying.
The thing is that, like, when they were dragging, like, themselves along later on, that was kind of funny. Like, you could just see them struggling to get there. They're making weird noises, like, struggling to just go after this human.
You've got the deer with just his front hooves just pulling himself along. And
Did they ever explain the bell?
No, it's just their way of keeping her in line.
Yeah, like that to me
Pacific
was,
and Northwest is what we're talking about here.
Pacific and Northwest, anytime she starts to show any kind of independence, even just disagreeing with her parents, her father gives her a verbal warning, and then her father rings a bell, and immediately she puts her hands down and looks down, and like, a lot to unpack in the 2 seconds it takes for that to happen.
You want to talk about trauma, that poor girl.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, like, the problem with it, well, I guess not a problem, something that just makes the story better, but the problem with that happening is that it's basically her parents are basically treating her like one of their other servants.
Right.
Which is...
Well, or... I'm implying that she was probably... She was possibly physically disciplined, the bell was the final warning. Like, that's what I got from it.
I mean,
like,
I saw it more as, like, Pavlov's dog, where...
But that's
the
what
ringing
I mean.
Of the bell created a response in her to quiet down.
But that's what I mean. It's like, created that response? Okay. What is it? Ring the bell. The bell rings. I better do this or the consequence.
I honestly really wish that she could have, like, snatched Ev's hand and just smashed it at the very end and just go screw this.
It is an open question mark that could be very easily overlooked in the series.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's definitely open to interpretation.
It's one of those, like, things that really, like, it's a small moment, but it really develops a character. It develops technically two characters. It develops Pacifica and also Pacifica's father.
Right.
Mr. Northwest.
Yeah.
Like, it really develops the type of people that they are and the type of, like, and, like, maybe the influence of their actions.
Sure.
Like, Pacifica in the series, whenever she shows up, is this, like that stereotypical stuck-up rich girl.
She's the mean girl.
But whenever that happens and we see the interaction between her and her father and, like, he rings the bell, that really, like, brings some depth into how Pacifica acts. She's trying to please the town. She's trying to please her father. She's trying to act perfect, even though she knows she's not. And she does have independence in her. She's just not allowed to express it the way that she wants to.
Right.
I feel like that it definitely changes by the end of that episode. And I really do wish that later on the series we got to see Pacifica again. Because I don't think we do until the very, like, finale.
Yeah, until Weirdmageddon again. Yeah, I think that would have been really interesting because am I wrong? Was there a little spark there between Pacifica and Dipper in that episode?
If nothing else, there was a spark of a genuine friendship.
Yeah.
That wasn't... I don't even know that it got fully developed because even at the end, she's ragging on everything they're doing.
Right.
So it's almost like they forgot that moment happened.
Yeah.
It's still like, I feel like there was a genuine possibility for friendship between Dipper and Pacifica. And although it's not, like, shown in the canon show, I do own one of the graphic novel books, and it does confirm that they do grow closer.
Oh, okay.
It's just that it's not shown in the show, and it still has Pacifica being her personality at this point. She's grown up with this personality. She's gonna stick with it because she doesn't know what else.
Right.
So, although she does act more stuck up in the finale of the show and everything, she still has, like, she still has that bit of a caring heart and, like, wanting to help out and everything. You can see that definitely in the finale where she... stays behind to help, like, with the ritual between Bill. I guess we should just start talking about Weirdmageddon.
Yeah, might as well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could definitely tell that this could be a defining moment in her life. Like, she could start to turn things around and not necessarily be perfect, but, you know, she could at least kind of start to...
Be better.
I feel like part of the reason why Pacifica turned away Mabel so fast in the show, because Mabel and Pacifica met... like, before this episode, and I feel like the reason why Pacifica, like, basically, like, turned away Mabel so fast and everything is because Mabel is, like, basically the embodiment of being a free spirit.
Yeah, she's everything Pacifica can't be.
Yeah, yeah, she's the embodiment of just not caring what other people think.
Right.
She's the embodiment of being able to basically do whatever she wants, and if she messes up, people will, like, support her and help her, like, with her mistake. Well, Pacifica gets none of that support in her family.
No, absolutely
She has to stand up. She has to uphold these high standards.
Right. Yeah, she's just jealous.
Yeah.
Black, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really sad.
Like, well, of course it is, yeah.
And I really do wish that we got to see more of Pacifica, because although Pacifica's mean, she's one of my favorites just because of her attitude towards everything. It's hilarious to me.
So, Weirdmageddon basically... shows the end of Gravity Falls as far as, like, it's almost like a post-apocalyptic thing. But it mainly shows Bill Cipher, who has been our kind of villain in the wings. Like,
main antagonist.
But at the same time, he's never been, like, the bad guy until the very end.
He's been a looming presence.
Yes, that's probably a good way to put it. Because, you know, mostly it's Monster of the Week episodes. There are some that string together, and they all have a little taste of the lore in it, but, I mean, it really hits the fan when Bill takes over Gravity Falls here in the last few episodes for Weird Mageddon. One thing I really dug about that is that, once again, it is scary, because he's literally, there's the one scene where he says, I need to go make some children some corpses or something like that.
Yeah. I need to go turn some children into corpses.
There you go. I mean, that's pretty dark.
Most of the time you just hear a villain go, I'm going to go kill those kids. No, they're going to go make them get into corpses. Them.
You know, yeah. It's really
I don't know why,
soft,
but saying you're going to go kill someone and saying you're going to go make them into corpses have two very different energies.
Yes. But at the same time, it was goofy, too. You know, the weird... It wasn't like it turned everybody into zombies. You know, some people were... Like, there's the creepy guy with the big arm out of his head, and he's just dragging himself along. And then there's, you know, there's the bats with... Or the eyeballs with bat wings.
That turn everybody into concrete.
Yeah, you know, so I mean, there's just, it's scary, but it's also goofy enough that, again, it's not horrifying.
There's also, there's also the reaction to the other townsfolk that we see in the background... Like, of this whole apocalypse, some of them had really funny moments. Like, there was the news anchor who said, I'm Sean Ramirez, and I ate a rat for dinner.
that quote just gives me,
it's funny, but also really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, she also signed off while being turned into stone. Yeah. Professional to the end.
Yeah.
But along with that, we have to kind of talk about the Pine twins, Stanford and Stanley. I mean, from the beginning of the show... We always wondered who the author was. And so when we finally find out that it's... Is it Stanford?
Yes,
Stanford Pine. That who has been in another dimension for the last 30 years. You know, I think that was a really holy cow moment. Especially when you saw that he had the six fingers, just like on the journal. Mm-hmm. And you found out that basically... The beautiful part of that is that Stanford is Dipper. Stanley is Mabel. You know, they're very parallels. Yeah, they're very parallel. Stanford and Dipper, the book smart guys, and they're, you know, really focused on
Stanley and Mabel are more free spirited,
yes,
more
physical and more
go with the flow kind of.
Yeah. And
more whimsy to each of them, but it's almost like they're the light and dark of the same
coin.
Like he is cynical and, you know, opportunistic, and she is trying to create opportunity and you know, so happy all the time.
Yes.
I love Mabel.
But, you know, I thought that was a really cool parallel when we finally meet Stanford and see that parallel between the twins.
The thing is that, like, you can actually kind of see the parallel in previous episodes between, like, Stanley and Mabel. And you can kind of see where Dipper, like, feels left out from it. Mm-hmm. Because I think in, a few episodes even... There is a, there's like a few shots where it's Dipper looking at Stanley and Mabel or like talking to both of them and they're both saying something that's like both very whimsical and very like free spirited, like they're just saying weird stuff from saying weird stuff. Mm-hmm. And Dipper's just kind of sitting there like, I don't know what else to add or I'm just bored or like he's annoyed at them.
He just doesn't think that way.
And once he meets Ford, he kind of feels more part of the family because he's like, oh my God, the guy I've been looking up to this entire time is my great uncle. I'm able to relate to him. He likes supernatural stuff just like I do. And like, I feel like that was a very important moment for Dipper to have.
Absolutely.
It's him feeling finally part of his family.
Yeah, I can see that. Absolutely. One of the episodes we did watch was the story of the two brothers, and I really dug that one.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, it is paralleled in the Weird Mageddon stuff a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
In that one, Stanley wrecks Stanford's chance of going to some big high-tech, you know, college.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Weird Mageddon, we have the possibility that Dipper could go with Stanford and be his intern, and, you know, they would basically... go around and fight paranormal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is exactly what Dipper wants to do, but instead Mabel takes the rift that they need to do that to defeat Bill, and she takes it out into the forest and gives it away to Bill. And so there's a lot of parallels there too that I just thought was just incredible writing.
She also was kind of, although not intentionally, she was kind of trying to wreck Dipper's chance of becoming
Ford's
apprentice and
is
everything.
That Stanley did the same thing when he wrecked Stanford's science experiment.
Which, like...
He had no reason to be there.
And the other thing is, like, he immediately felt bad.
Yeah.
as did she. She thought she was doing the right thing. They're both acting out instead of expressing their them being hurt.
Right.
Yeah.
And actually talking to each other.
Mm-hmm. Because like that doesn't make a good cartoon.
I feel like right. that's a problem with both Ford and Stan. Stanford and Stanley. But, like, Ford and Stan, the Pines twins, like, they're both horrible at expressing their emotions in a healthy way. Ford, I feel like, is a little better with it, but he's still not, like, not able to fully express what he is feeling until it's like in the finale where he's finally opening up, like, we're gonna die, so I guess I have to share this now.
Well, and he finally said, I forgive you for for wrecking my science experiment. But he didn't, to him, it was more important to stop Bill. Yeah. Whereas for Stanley, he actively didn't hold hands with Ford.
Stanley?
Because he was still upset that
Mabel and Seuss are the two emotionally probably most evolved character out of everybody.
Yeah.
They could, you know, they will talk about their feelings. Those two goofballs.
That's true. Yeah.
Everybody else avoids it until they have
to. It's funny because when you...
Lynch my Mulock.
If you look at, like, Weird McGinnon and then you go back to the series, you can kind of notice... one, Stan's behavior towards, like, sibling relationships and, like, what, and, like, being, like, having your sibling around is important and everything, and, like, and also just how much he cares about family. And you can also notice, like, how he's very guarded. He doesn't really open up much. In one of the episodes, like, Mabel and Dipper find out a bunch about him in his past and, like, and like in a shoebox, literally.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so like it's he's very guarded character, and I feel like that's just more compelling as a character. He's like we want to see more of him to learn more of him.
Sure, absolutely.
And I think in season two, the last season of the series, we definitely get to see more of Stan and who he is as a person. We know. Like, we learn that he loves his family so much, but he also wants, like, recognition from his family.
Sure.
That's part of the reason why he does so much for his family.
Well,
he wants them to be proud of him. He wants that recognition.
And he, you know, we saw that in the episode with the two brothers.
Yeah.
We saw his family was constantly ragging on Stanley. He could never do anything right. He was always messing up. And Stanford was the chosen one. He was the one that everybody loved. And so he carried that weight with him for decades, you know? And so it's completely understandable that he would be guarded because everything he did was wrong.
Especially since Stan, in his episode with his brother in the past, got kicked out of his home because he messed up his brother's chance.
That's what I'm saying. That's
like his parents care more about his brother's success than his emotions and his feelings.
Absolutely.
And I feel like that obviously very much like scarred Stan and how he acts and how he behaves. But I also feel like it kind of scarred Ford. Because,
sure it did.
Because
Ford would carry that guilt.
Yeah.
His brother, you know, being treated that way.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, you'd have Stan carrying the guilt that he messed this up.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, Stan also kind of recognizes that it wasn't his brother's fault. It was the parents. Because he still helps.
Yeah, he still helps him in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He still tries and, like, make amends with his brother, but he can't let go of the fact that his brother never forgave him for what happened.
Right.
And never thanked him for saving him out of the dimension. Even though... Stan was the reason that Ford was put into a new dimension. He still helps Stan, like, come back to the...
Ford.
Ford.
Yeah.
He still helped Ford come back to his dimension and, like, saved him. Which, although what he did was bad, at least he made up for, like, helping him and, like, spending all these years doing illegal stuff just to get the supplies to fix this portal.
Right. But Ford couldn't have known that. Ford thought he just kind of, you know, messed around for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, admittedly, Ford didn't say thank you for helping and bringing me back. You know, I mean, nobody was really right in that situation.
Ford and Stan are very guarded with their emotions. Yeah. They cannot...
Well, and there's also the aspect of taking family for granted. Assuming that you can treat them like garbage and they'll still always be there.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true, though. I think there's definitely some family trauma in there, too. I mean, it's not like their dad was a nice guy. He was completely mean and had no emotions.
He very rarely was proud of them for doing anything. The only person he was really proud of was Ford, just because Ford was possibly going to earn them riches. That was the entire point, was that Ford had a possibility to go into something great and get and them make money. Them rich.
That's, yeah.
And that was the whole, like, thing that Stan and Ford's father really wanted. That's why instead of, like, when Stan was kicked out by his father, his father didn't exclaim, like, you messed up your brother's chance. Yeah. He said, you messed up our chance to get out of this place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's obvious that his father was only using Ford to, like,
well, get money. Only a meal ticket. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like their mother, Stan and Ford's mother, was a little bit more kind, but also more neglectful.
I think she
in
was
way.
Checked out. I think she was...
Well, I think it was supposed to be, like, the, you know, the checked out, stay-at-home mom's trope.
Right, yeah.
Of that, you know, 50s, 60s.
And, I mean, that's where we're looking at, too, is that time period of maybe the 50s or 60s, and that is just how people were, you know.
Unfortunately.
The very closed-off, masculine, you know, John Wayne type was not uncommon. And so, I think that all leads back to where both of those boys came from, and both of their responses to one another when they needed each other.
They also, like, Grunkle Stan, Stanley... While he was taking care of Dipper and Mabel, he kind of, like, I remember in the episode where we first meet Bill, we go into Stan's mind, and we look through Stan's memories. And Dipper finds a memory of Stan basically, like, whispering to Suze, he's weak, I just want to get rid of him. And at first, Dipper is thinking that is Stan finally revealing his true feelings about him. But then we later on, like, listen more to the memory, and it's Stan actually, like, reminiscing of how people used to talk about him,
right?
And like, and that's why he pushes Dipper to do so much. He wants Dipper to grow stronger. He wants Dipper to be able to stand up for himself.
Right.
And I feel like that little moment is like definitely of Stan showing his emotions towards his great niece and nephew.
Yeah.
It's him showing that he does care for these kids, even if he, like, is a bit harsh on them and a bit hard on them. He's trying to do it he's in his own way, trying to do it for their best.
Right.
Even though it's not, like, seen as the best, Dipper does grow stronger and is able to stand up for himself. And throughout the series, he sticks with that after that episode.
That's true.
And Mabel is able to also stand up for herself and be able to, like, and be able to speak her mind. Although she was able to speak her mind, like, usually, just being this happy-go-lucky kid, she's able to speak her mind more emotionally and negatively, in a way.
I feel like the most important that Mabel learned throughout the show was to allow herself to have fantasies and dreams, but also still be grounded.
Yeah.
Like, in the end there in Weirdmageddon, when she was in her little prison, she could have stayed there forever and had everything her way.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually she had to come to the realization that that's not how life is.
Yeah.
And instead, you have to take the good with the bad. And so they broke out of the prison. And
thinking back on
also
it,
it's a matter of growing up, because
that was
also
what I'm saying.
Game, yeah.
You know, that's what I'm getting at.
Thinking back on it, Stan definitely helped with that as well. It's like, he definitely, in, like, very little ways. It wasn't as shown as with Dipper and him. But if you look back at the episodes and, like, look very closely at how Stan speaks to Mabel and acts around Mabel, it's obvious that he's, like, trying to get her to, like, jump out of fantasy a little bit and stick with reality.
Get a little more grounded. But at the same time, I feel like he's also very supportive of her. You know, I know there's a couple episodes where there's one in particular where he has her make a, like, glitter version of him or something like that.
It's a wax statue version.
Right.
And
he lets her go nuts with it, basically.
Which, looking back on that episode, it's real dark, if you think about it. Not only was it because it was horrifying with wax statues coming to life, but Stan was looking at a perfect, identical version of himself
right.
with his head chopped off.
Right.
And I feel like that gave him some flashbacks, which is terrifying looking back on it, but at the same time, great foreshadowing. Like, but yeah, he definitely inspires Mabel to continue with her creativity, but he also tries to ground her a little bit.
Yeah, he tries to
While he also tries to make Dipper a little bit stronger and able to stand up for himself instead of just being a nervous kid.
And I think that's probably a good way to lead into the finale, where we saw... Basically, spoiler alert.
this whole thing's a spoiler.
I know, that's true. Where we see that Stan's memory has to be erased for Bill to be erased. Eliminated. Yeah.
Bill is trapped in Stan's mind, and they need to erase Stan, which means erasing his entire mind, so that way Bill is defeated completely.
Right. And I really loved how, they could have left it at that. It would have been dark, but it might have been kind of fun to try to rebuild that relationship. Mm-hmm. Almost, you know what it reminded me of? This is not going to make any sense to you, Harper, but it reminded me of Dr. Donna. The Doctor Who episode where basically the traveling assistant that has been with the Doctor for two seasons or whatever, she literally has her mind erased, and the entire adventure she had been on is gone from her mind. She has no idea, even though that's all she ever wanted in life was to have an adventure. And it reminds me very much of that, and it could have been interesting to have them come back next summer and rebuild those memories with Stan.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas instead, they're wrapping up the series. They have to show, okay, here's the family scrapbook from the summer. We'll rebuild his memory that way.
Well, but the interesting thing is you don't know it's working until he they almost imply it's like a lizard brain reaction. When
right.
Because he doesn't figure it out until he's like,
he says something.
Waddles, stop it! Get Waddles off of me, or whatever.
Yeah, it's until he's actually kind of mean again.
Right, he's crunchy. Because then all of a sudden he remembers, oh, that's the name of the pig that's licking my face.
It also kind of, like, in a very subtle way, at least this is what the fandom has picked up on, it kind of very subtly left a bit of a creepy ending with him regaining his memory. Because if he regained his mind and his memory, does that mean Bill's back? That just built a bunch of fan theories and stuff after the show ended. It gained a lot of people to look into the show and find clues and everything. And I feel like it's a sweet ending to see Grunkle Stan being surrounded by his family and the people he cares about, just remembering the summer and having references be pulled and showing that this is the end of the summer. We're gonna look back on it.
So to me, that would tell me that Bill would not come back. Because he's remembering the good things that happened to him during the summer, not necessarily Bill. So, that's my opinion as a, fan canon, head canon thing, is I would say Bill couldn't come back because he's not going to be a part of those memories. It's not like they're going to mention it to him, so they're not going to bring it back up. But then, of course, we have the nice touching moment at the end where the kids finally realize this was our journey and we need to grow up and we need to do it together, as the siblings. Because earlier in the show, we saw that might not happen. They might have had a rift that was irreconcilable, but they came back together at the end because they realized they needed each other.
The whole episode was literally repairing a rift.
Yeah. That just dawned on you there?
That just got you?
Someday I'll be smarter. It's
fine. I feel like Gravity Falls, I remember specifically. I remember Gravity Falls was the very first cartoon series I ever cried at the ending. Because I was so happy to see these characters be able to fight the apocalypse, be able to get their Grunkle's memory back, being able to have their 13th birthday, and then suddenly it cuts and they're at the bus station. And I'm just like, oh, I remember. They have to go home now.
Yeah, they gotta go home.
Yeah, they really fool you into forgetting about it through the whole thing.
It's still gonna have a bit of a downer ending.
They make
the journey's over.
They make you think that these characters are gonna stay here for a while, but then the end of the series happens, and you're just like, oh yeah, they're not from Gravity Falls.
Right.
It's also because they fit so well into Gravity Falls that you think, oh, they've grown up here.
Right.
They're just staying at their Grunkle's cabin for a little bit.
Right.
They're staying for the summer, and then they're just going to move back to their house. No, they're going to move to California again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely cried when it first ended. I first saw that because I was just like, I love these characters. I don't want this to end.
Now, what's really cool is that the series was not canceled. Hirsch actually said, I want to end it. So that's how we got a nice, perfect bow on the ending. You
that's
know,
that's the thing I really like, is the fact that he specifically said, yes, this is the end of the series.
Yeah,
like, this isn't a cancel thing, because so many shows that I love, like, either had to have a rush ending because of cancellation, or they are just canceled abruptly and there was
no proper ending.
This is where I tell you that this is your curse to bear.
It is.
Because, like, every show I would fall in love with, canceled.
After, like, one season.
Yeah, like, a season and out. I'm sorry I've passed it on to you.
Whereas I have... Well, no, I guess that's not exactly true either. I have shows like Hannibal that went on for far longer than it should have, according to the ratings.
So you both cursed me. Nice.
But, you know, I love that he was able to finish it his way. And, in fact, he has said that's probably it. He's really, you know, he would come back if there were more story to tell, but he doesn't really feel like he has anything more to say.
So then where do the graphic novels and stuff
The graphic
come
novels
from?
And stuff were basically just extra material, and they were just side stories.
Okay.
Most of it didn't have any...
concurrent with the series. Yeah. Like,
there was
something that happened.
There was like little bits of lore in it, but it wasn't like, okay, yeah, the series is coming back.
It
was just tiny bits. That, and also something that you probably don't know, and you probably do, is the scavenger hunt happened.
Yep.
In the very last episode of Weirdmageddon, in the very last episode of Gravity Falls, at the end credits, when the entire credits roll, you see a quick flash, and it is the real-life Bill Cipher statue, because that's how Bill basically died, is he was frozen to stone, and that's how he looks when he's out of his body, basically.
Right.
And people start freaking out when that first aired, and they're just like, oh, is there a real statue? Is this actually there? And then Alex Hirsch, like, released a few clues for the scavenger hunt to show people, like, and basically, like, took them on a worldwide scavenger hunt to find this real statue.
Yeah.
And people actually found it. People actually found the statue. The first people found, like, a gift box with a signed journal and everything. And I feel like that was his final gift to the fans.
Absolutely.
Was, here, I'm going to lead you to a statue.
I'm going
to
send you on a real adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to send you on a real adventure like Dipper and Mabel go on. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was a really nice and really fun way of wrapping up the show This is the end.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah, in fact, I did a little bit of research on that. When the statue was found, it had been placed on private property. And Hirsch clearly did not know that. And so a bunch of people started coming to see the statue. And so the property owners were like, what's going on? And they found the statue, and they actually had the statue confiscated by the police in that region.
Oh, no.
And so Hirsch had to go to the police and tell them what happened, and he was sorry, and, you know, he had to apologize. And so basically he got the statue back and gave it to which is kind of funny, he gave it to a tourist trap in California that he used to go to as a kid.
Really?
Yeah. And so now it's at basically a mystery shack in California. The statue is now located at Confusion Hill, a roadside tourist trap not unlike the mystery shack, located in Piercy, California. And I want to say they have something called, like, the gravity room or something like that. So it's kind of has a little bit of a tie there to it.
I did not know that. I did not know he got in trouble for placing it.
I didn't know any of that either. I just heard that it had been found and that was cool, and that was all I ever heard about it.
I just heard people, like, make theories about it and, like, thinking there was some hidden lore in the series.
Well, and that was one thing that I never paid attention to, but maybe you did. At the end of every episode, there were clues. Mm-hmm. There was a
tons
code
of them.
Yeah.
I think just season one, I might be wrong, but in every end of the episode, there was a cipher.
Yeah.
And people would try and solve it. There's also Easter eggs, like letters to solve stuff. If in like one of the episodes, I remember there was like, they went to a museum, and if you look at like a T-Rex's back or something, there's like letters and you can mark them out. While Mabel was running through like running through like a fair or something, you could see letters and things and you can piece them all together.
Yeah, so that's awesome.
Like the amount of detail that they put into this show is incredible.
It really is. Which I mean, it's clearly a labor of love by Hirsch.
And I'm really happy that Hirsch was able to have so much freedom with the show, because like now I hear cartoons that I'm interested in or I watch, and they're like not having as much freedom with their storyline. They're not having as much freedom with how the story's gonna go. Because, like, it's mostly with Disney shows.
Yeah.
Mostly in Disney shows, they're being watched 24/7 on how they're writing the show.
Well, Disney has a lot of pressure on them. I mean, they are seen as a kids' network.
Yeah.
So they have to kind of watch out for things. Now, that being said, we do have to talk about the gay elephant in the room, or not in the room. We have to talk about the deputy and the sheriff. The clearly coded gay characters.
Little, like, married couple.
Yeah.
Sheriff
Hirsch.
Sheriff Blubbs and Deputy Durland.
Yes. Hirsch got a lot of pushback on that because he wanted to make them a couple. Like, he wanted to say, these are gay men in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And Disney would not allow it. So he had to code it. And he did a really good job, but then I feel like at the very end in Weirdmageddon, he was just like, screw it. I'm just gonna... Because, you know, they're there together, and he goes to rescue him, and you know, so I mean, it was clearly just a kind of like, look, I'm done, I'm out of here.
A quick Easter egg that someone pointed out that I really like is that in an episode called The Love God, love. Mabel is wearing like pink heart shaped earrings and a rainbow sweater because Hirsch wasn't allowed to put. Even in the background, I don't think, of gay people, like, kissing and being in love. I think even, looking back on, like, background stuff, in one of the original, like, clips, there was going to be the love god who puts two soulmates together, and it was going to be two women.
Yes.
And so Hirsch put Mabel in a rainbow sweater to signify that this is an episode about love, meaning all kinds of love.
Yes.
Even though he could not put any gay characters in the series, he still wanted to signify that there are all different types of love.
Sure.
And I feel mm-hmm. like I just love that for him being able to work around this very strict kind of homophobic system.
Yeah.
And being able to show like that there are different types of loves out there in a very subtle way.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about the Love God episode where you're absolutely right. I remember hearing about he couldn't even put two people holding hands, or it was something like that. Yeah, he wanted to try to show two women.
And I remember him going off on Disney on Twitter about them posting how they love LGBTQ people. And he's just like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Remember this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I love the creativity, and I love how much of an ally that he is to the community, and like shows that he's like I tried to put gay people in the show, but they wouldn't let me.
Yeah. But I loved those characters too, like the sheriff and the deputy. They were great, and it was cute that they were in love, and I had no problem. I mean, I don't understand why it was a big deal. But...
And the best part about
that's right. Remember, on the show, fists for nipples, okay.
Yeah. Two men in love.
Absolutely
can't
not.
Have that.
A giant.
No rainbow flags, but a gnome can literally
puke rainbows.
Okay, but like, here's the thing. We can have a giant evil Dorito demon who's like making children into corpses.
Right.
But no, you cannot make these two cops gay. Of course not.
Yeah.
How dare you?
That's Disney at the time.
We came here to make stuffed animals bleed from their eyes, not to make two men holding hands. Like,
that's right.
I just find it kind of stupid how strict they are. I understand why, but I'm just like, you're gonna be filled with a generation of kids and even adults who are just gonna be like, why can't we just put this in the show?
But it's my understanding that Disney has relaxed things some, because I want to say, you probably know better than I do, Alex Hirsch's partner, Owl something,
Owl House.
There you go. Isn't that doesn't have clearly?
It does.
Okay.
However.
Okay.
Disney threatened to cancel the show.
Oh, well, maybe things haven't gotten better.
Disney canceled to threaten the show.
Threatened to cancel.
There's also a possibility it will get canceled.
Okay.
Depending on what's going on. But yeah, they had a canonical non-binary character. They had two. They had the main character fall in love with a female cast member who is also basically a main character at this point. They have the main owl lady being basically a lesbian, and like they also had like background characters who were openly gay. There were characters who would flirt with each other that were the same sex. So this show was very much LGBTQ. However, Disney is like, at least from what I've heard, it's threatened to cancel the show and it's threatened to take it down.
But that doesn't make any sense. Why would they cancel, or why would they threaten it after the fact? Like, clearly, somebody's read the scripts.
Well,
they know
what's
going on.
Well, it's because of what parents have complained.
Okay.
People have complained about this, saying they're just going, my kids can't learn anything gay, because what if they turn gay?
So it was okay for the censors, but not okay for the parents. And so, okay, that makes sense. I didn't think about that.
So essentially, because Disney's getting so much
pushback,
so much negative feedback about this show, even though there's plenty of positive feedback from like a bunch of viewers, there's still some negative aspects from parents who are paying for Disney Plus, who are paying for this, and like threatening to cancel their subscription. So they're like now going, we need to tone down the gay.
Well, baby steps, I guess.
I'm at least happy that Disney was able to, allow that to happen. And I'm happy that it's still up. Like, Owl House, right now on Disney Plus is still up and you can still watch it. But I'm not happy with how they are now threatening it because of the feedback and everything.
Sure.
Because of how everything's going. Because I think for a while, the main problem with putting gay characters in a show is because of other countries and censorship.
Sure. China.
And this show passed it, but it's because of parents, mostly here in America, from what I've heard, like complaining about having a gay character on screen, having a main gay character on screen, that is giving them this like need to possibly cancel the show.
Well, it's been an interesting last few years where the folks on the right who are against that kind of thing have become very vocal, and they've been emboldened, and so it's not surprising to me at all that they're raising a fuss, just because that's what they can
do. Let people be in love. Let people be gay.
It's a whole nother conversation. I guess to kind of wrap things up, I loved Gravity Falls literally since the first episode that I watched. I honestly don't think there were any bad episodes. I think it was amazing. Critics have mostly agreed. If you look on Rotten Tomatoes, it has 100% critic rating, which is insane.
Yeah.
And even the audience rating is like 97%. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's just insane. Not many shows can say that. I absolutely will watch this show. I mean, we own the DVD set. It's on Disney Plus.
I would throw it on anytime.
Yeah, anytime. I loved this show. I'm so happy that it was around. I'm happy that you got into it.
I'm very happy with it because it definitely inspired me, like, because I write cartoons and, like, write stuff like that, and it's definitely inspired me in, like, projects that I've been working on. It's definitely inspired me in, like, art styles and stuff and, like, trying to figure that out. So, yeah, this show is near and dear to my heart.
I definitely feel like it's a touchstone show for you. Like, I think
It's one of the four shows that really, like, made my personality.
And I think that's awesome.
We already spoke about Adventure Time and now Gravity Falls.
And we'll get to it. Don't give away our.
Okay.
I love
that. Right. This podcast is only for giving away the entire plot of series. Sometimes two for one.
Just not our
those
plots.
Of us who haven't watched Owl House. So you know, but not what we might do in the future.
Okay.
Come on. We gotta save something back.
your boundaries.
No, I'm really glad you like it. I'm really glad you latched onto it, because like I said, I loved it from the first episode, and I was really happy that you got into it too. Again, I would watch anytime. Mm-hmm. I know you've watched it more than once.
Five times.
I would, you know, would you? Do you think you might want to try to catch the whole thing? Like, do you want to not necessarily start over at episode
one? No, I mean, it's definitely one of those things that I feel like it's now in my rotation of things that I could put on in the background because it doesn't require my full attention. Because as we were finding out, I've probably seen the whole thing, but it's probably been out of order.
Yeah, more than once we'd be watching something and go, oh, I remember this.
Yeah, and I go, oh, yeah, I know how this turns out.
I mean, there's probably a good chance you sat down with Harper while she was watching it sometime and just happened to catch an episode. So yeah, I mean, I think it's an amazing show. I'm really glad we watched what we did watch again. I'd love to sit down and go through it again. I'd also like to go through the DVDs that we have, because it's got a bunch of extras. Commentary and, yeah, extra features. There's also a podcast. Now, I didn't know about this until well after the series was over.
Really?
Yeah, Alex Hirsch put out a podcast after every episode. He would go through and talk about creating that episode.
Might all be on the DVDs.
It could be. But I know there's a podcast. Like, I've subscribed to it. I haven't listened to it yet, though.
I also vaguely remember watching, like, a video of Alex Hirsch talking about inspirations for the show, how the show started off, like, writing the show, animating it, like, all that stuff. And I remember really loving that video.
That's
like,
on the DVDs.
It is?
Yeah.
We need to watch it.
Yeah. Anytime. I love it. So, okay. I think this is a 3 thumbs up for Gravity Falls. Absolutely. So thanks for listening, everybody. And next time it'll be my choice. And I'm, as I said earlier, I'm going to hold back, and I'm not going to tell you what it's going to be. It's just going to have to be a surprise.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.
No spoilers for our podcast. Spoilers for the rest of the shows, but right. Not our podcast.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.